air at 3 p.m. weekdays on KPFT Houston. View our full schedule at kpft.org.
Let me finish the intro. I believe you're entitled to your own opinion, but not your own facts. You can also listen live on kpft.org. You can get the show on demand after broadcast. Also at kpft.org on demand. Open forum today. The phone number is 713-526-5738, also known as 713-526-KPFT. My engineer and conversational, well, we don't like to use the term partner because that has implications. Co-conversationalist. I'm going to stick with co-conversationalist. Egberto Willis, always happy to have him. I love working with him. The website, if you want to check out some of the old shows, in some cases going back to 2010, not on this station, though, thinkwingradio.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at ThinkWing Radio. So, if I sound tired, it's because I've been working on taxes. I've been experimenting with a new word. It doesn't roll off the tongue well, but if you think about it, it works. Taxogia. That's a combination of taxes and nausea. It's a way of basically saying that taxes make you sick to your stomach. You know, I believe in the need for taxes. I believe in progressive taxes. I wish I made enough money so I could pay more taxes. But doing taxes just really, can I say sucks? Yeah, I can say sucks. So if you are doing your taxes, dreading your taxes, pulling your hair out over your taxes, hate taxes, love taxes, want to change how they do taxes, we can talk about that. I mean, it's open forum. That's not what you must talk about, but we can talk about that. Do you think that taxes should be flat? Do you think that we should abolish income taxes and do VAT taxes, value-added taxes, like they do in Europe? Do you think they should be more progressive? Do you think we should focus on user fees? Personally, the reform I've been kind of wanting for about the last 20 years would be a combination of what you might call a progressive VAT tax, which I guess by its nature can be progressive. So like a VAT tax, and then over a certain amount, you have a progressive income tax, and then have some kind of earned income credit at the end of the year, so that most people would never really have to mess with the IRS. I mean, the numbers are kind of arbitrary. I think what I would probably choose is a median income. You would basically pay no income tax. You would be paying taxes. But for example, one of the thoughts I've had is maybe on a car under $10,000, maybe there wouldn't be any VAT tax. At $11,000, maybe you would add, I don't know how the math would work out, maybe a tenth of a percent. Maybe for every $1,000 it went up, maybe you would add a tenth of a percent or two-tenths of a percent. By the time you got to $50,000, it would be a much larger tax, but it wouldn't be one of those taxes that at some arbitrary cutoff suddenly goes from 5 to 10 to 15 to 20. So it would be incremental. It wouldn't necessarily do what, for example, the luxury tax on yachts did to the yachting industry, which basically devastated it. It's like just over a certain amount of money or a certain size, it became a, quote, yacht, and suddenly there was this enormous luxury tax on it. I'm thinking things like food and drugs would still be without tax. Maybe have the IRS, instead of auditing so many people, maybe one of the jobs the IRS would start to do is categorizing things. So perhaps McDonald's would have a fairly low VAT tax. When you start getting into some place like, pick a restaurant, Egbert, all of a sudden I'm blanking.
Let's say, wow.
Isn't that funny?
Denny's.
Denny's, okay. Denny's would have a little higher VAT tax. You have some Italian restaurants, pizza places have a little higher VAT tax. So basically, depending on the amount of work and the amount of value added to the product, you would have a higher VAT tax. So the assumption would be that the more money you make, the more expensive stuff you tend to buy. You tend to eat less at McDonald's and, let's say, more at Pappas Brothers. So you would pay a higher VAT tax on your food, but a lower VAT tax if you're a fast food kind of guy or a Denny's kind of guy. And then over, if you earn over like $50,000, at that point, progressive income tax would start. And the more you made, the more progressive income tax you would pay. But one of the beauties of the VAT tax plan, where under a certain amount nobody would pay income tax, is it would tap into the cash economy. So you have a multi-billion-dollar cash economy, people who hide money. Some people hide a little money, $1,000 or $2,000 or $5,000 a year. Some people just turn off, like if they have a retail business, they'll turn off a cash register and maybe take in $1,000 a week. And it's all cash. I've seen it. I mean, I've been in sales, and people just bring out these big wads and buy $3,000 worth of appliances for cash. I mean, you got to know that's a skim of some kind. So those people would have to pay taxes. It wouldn't just be sales tax. It wouldn't just be a state sales tax or a local sales tax. And that's another thing. Maybe part of that process would be that states, just like the states with income taxes, use the federal income tax as sort of a basis, so you sort of work off that form. You would also have state and local governments, which would work off the federal VAT system, and their sales tax might adjust accordingly. So instead of sales tax being as regressive as it is now, sales taxes themselves would become a little bit more progressive, maybe a lot more progressive. Anyway, those are some of my ideas on sales taxes. I'd like to hear, or on taxes generally, I'd like to hear some of yours. The phone number is 713-526-5738. It is open forum. We don't have a guest, so you can talk about anything that occurs to you. Another topic that is still on everybody's lips is McCutcheon versus FEC. Stephen Breyer, Justice Stephen Breyer, someone tweeted a quote from his dissent, and I thought it was really powerful. Breyer wrote, "Where enough money calls the tune, the general public will not be heard." Now, I'm assuming from the tweet that this is actually in the dissent. I haven't looked it up yet.
There was a similar message in the dissent.
Okay. So that may or may not be verbatim, but it is at least a sense of what he said. 140 characters, they may have...
Yeah, I actually read the whole dissent. And
really?
The
executive report, summary.
Right, that he had. And it was striking. You know, it really was striking.
Not as striking as the majority decision. Wow. We have open lines, 713-526-5738. So the Supreme Court, let me pull out the article. I've got some highlighted stuff here. Okay, 5-4 decision, split along predictable lines. The swing vote was Justice Kennedy. And what the decision means is that instead of an aggregate limit for contributors of about $123 total in political contributions for a two-year election cycle, that number now is $3.5 million. So one individual, without even having to go through a PAC, can now contribute up to $3.5 million to party committees and candidates over 2 years. We have a caller, Mary from the Woodlands. You're on the air. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, and you?
Good, thank you. What's on your mind?
Well, I just heard the last part of your discussion about taxes, but I believe that the best thing that we could do is go to a wealth tax, get rid of the sales taxes, get rid of the income taxes.
How would that work in your opinion?
Well, the people that have wealth of less than a certain amount, say, I don't know, a few hundred thousand or a million, wouldn't have to pay anything, and then the tax could be made progressive from there on up. And so you wouldn't have to file any statements of your income, whether earned or unearned or anything, just the money that you hold.
How would that be calculated? Would that be total assets, appraised value? Would that be bank deposits? Would that be
Guess you'd have to submit, you'd have to get statements from your bank or from your brokerage house or from your mutual funds or anything like that, and you would have to present those as your documents to the IRS the same way that we do now with W-2s or 1099s. And so that would be a lot simpler than trying to keep track of income. And it would just make everything so much easier for everybody, for the whole working population. It would just make it so much easier and less traumatic for them.
People would have to
go to companies like H&R Block to get their taxes done.
But that wealth would then be taxed repeatedly. Essentially, that same dollar would be taxed every year.
Well, sure, but that's, you set the rate accordingly so that it takes all that into account.
Mm.
But okay. You're not taxed on the income coming in every year. That's the whole difference.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, I'll have to chew on that for a while.
Now, I heard something today about the Senate Finance Committee, and I'd love to have some clarification on it. They had something that I saw on the news. They had a couple of things, issues that they were working on, and one of them had something to do with people that are in the lower or middle tax brackets or income brackets. They wanted to somehow scrutinize what was going on with them because they wanted to make sure. Now, on the face of it, they said something like, they wanted to make sure that they weren't being ripped off by paid tax preparers. But then on the other hand, apparently they were saying that these tax preparers were putting in credits and things for the taxpayer to make it look like they were getting a higher refund. And the Senate Finance Committee wanted to go after that because they were afraid that people were getting bigger refunds than they should have because of all these things they weren't really entitled to. But then on the other hand, they say, well, we're just trying to protect people from being, you know,
ripped off,
screwed over by the tax preparers.
Let me ask you, Mary, if you could do me a favor. I have Lee on the next line, and he can't hold very long. Would you like to wait and come back on the air? Would you mind doing that, or do you feel?
All right.
Okay, great. I appreciate that. Lee, Mary has done you a solid. How are you doing tonight? You're on.
Well, I appreciate the young lady very much. Now, the use tax is interesting, but it's not fair because too many people, like our bond markets and others who rake in gazillions of dollars, it should be a tax on a percentage of every 100% of what you make. Just like the Social Security tax has a cap, take the cap off. If they make $40 million, take the percentage out of everything, and Social Security will never have a problem. Set a tax up on whatever percentage and set it so that the people at the bottom that are like poverty, like under 20 grand, have no taxes to pay other than the tax on booze and the tax on gas, okay? and whatever the states beat them up with. I mean, if it's a 2% tax, and that might be what it works out, so the people that are at the top that are taking in billions balance everything down. That's where I'm at, and I'll listen.
Okay.
Thanks.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Lee. So we're going to let Mary come back on, but I'm going to respond to Lee first. Mm-hmm. I think that you raised some interesting points. One of the reasons that I think everybody should have a certain amount excluded initially is because of equal treatment mm-hmm. under the law. So the rather than tax, for example, when you talk about nominal tax rates, the first X amount is, let's say, at 15%, and the Y amount is at 20%, and then the next amount over that is at 25%. So those are nominal tax rates. They're stepped. So if you earn one extra dollar, that extra dollar is what's taxed at the higher rate, not all the dollars that precede mm-hmm. it. And that's something that a lot of people do not understand. So to tax every dollar just because someone makes $1 billion a year would be unequal treatment under the law. Now, just because what I'm saying is income taxes, you know, with the proposal that I had and whatever Mary's proposal might do, that's not to say there should be no other taxes at all. That's not to say there shouldn't be transaction taxes of, you know, pick your poison from a fraction of a cent to a couple of cents per stock or per mm-hmm. transaction or whatever. But I think that everybody will agree after having gotten to April 15th that even if you believe in taxes and you believe that you should be taxed according to your means to some extent, because a 10% tax when you're earning $20,000 a year is a whole lot more painful than a 10% tax when you're earning $200,000 a year. And that's the whole theory, the whole premise behind progressivity. So, Mary, going back to your idea about
yeah.
taxing wealth,
yeah.
So what's to stop people from just putting money under their mattresses or getting really big safes to put in their house, and that way there's no record of the money in any kind of an account that anybody would have documentation for?
Well, what's to stop people from doing the very thing you were talking about earlier, coming in and buying $3,000 of hardware, you know, in cash?
A progressive consumption tax.
They're hiding income just the same way you feel like they might hide wealth.
That's true, but when they spend it, they would have to pay something on it. Whereas,
well, they'd pay it in cash, just like that guy did in the hardware store.
But if
to stop them from just paying cash for things. There's
well,
no record of that.
If you have a value-added tax, you can't escape taxation. I mean, in Europe, they don't have tax authorities as aggressive or successful as the IRS. And also in Europe, culturally speaking, from what I understand, tax evasion is kind of a continental sport. So the value-added tax kind of gets around that whole thing because you can't spend any money without paying this value-added tax. And that's the point of the guy who comes in with a $3,000 bankroll to buy appliances. Even though he's managed to hide it from the IRS because he's cashed checks directly at a bank, you know, made out to cash, or because someone has paid him in cash so they don't have to pay sales tax perhaps, but the moment he spends the money, it's taxed. So you end up tapping into that hidden cash economy a little bit more successfully.
Well, perhaps, but I think the VAT is a very hard tax to administer, and it's very complicated. And it's not just like our sales tax either. It taxes at every point of production. It doesn't
yes.
just tax the final product like
That's
we
true.
Would with a sales tax. So it's very complicated.
But you can put progressivity into a VAT, whereas it's very hard and frankly never done putting progressivity into a sales tax. So somebody who's getting by on welfare checks or unemployment pays exactly the same consumption tax as somebody who's making $100,000 a year. That's what makes the tax regressive. Tolls.
How would you do that, though, put progressivity into it?
I think that there are certain products that, you know, it gets kind of easy when it's a Mercedes. Mercedes starts with iron ore and ends up with a Mercedes, whereas a Yugo, for example, would start with iron ore and end up with a Yugo. So the value-added tax would have to do with the value added. If you have a Yugo and you have cardboard window cranks, obviously that doesn't add as much value as the amount of sheet metal and crash protection and sound insulation that you have in a Mercedes, all of which obviously adds greater additional value.
But how do you make it progressive to the person and their level of income?
It becomes progressive, I think, in part, perhaps, and, you know, this is all speculation on my part, But I think part of it is you figure value based on the final price point. You know, what part of the market is it aimed at?
That's not making it progressive in the sense that we think of as progressive, because you're still having people at the lower end of the income, range of income, paying much more percentage of their income into buying commodities than very rich people do, who are stashing their money away.
Well, for example, if you go into a restaurant and the restaurant serves USDA select beef, that might be VAT taxed at one number. Whereas if you go into Roots Chris Steakhouse, where it's USDA prime only, well, that would obviously be qualitatively able to be taxed at a higher VAT rate. You know, there's a there's a way to make a qualitative distinction.
You're going to have a luxury tax, more or less, added on to things. That's pretty much what you're saying, right?
Not precisely, because luxury taxes generally, as I understand them, tend to kick in at a certain point, whereas I want to incrementalize this kind of thing so that you don't take one segment of an industry and all of a sudden that segment has the bad luck to be at the point where the threshold is, like the yacht industry, which I think is one of the famous failures of luxury taxation.
I don't know. I still think that would be pretty cumbersome, and it doesn't really put the progressivity that you need into a tax system, which means that you need it to tax. In other words, it's still the same deal where whatever you're buying, no matter what your income level is, you're still paying the same tax on a given product. And what we need is something where people at the lower end of the income range are paying a lesser percentage of tax. And so what you're talking about wouldn't do that.
Well, it would at least attempt to do that, which is something sales tax doesn't do now.
Well, that's why I say we need a wealth tax. We don't need sales taxes because I really don't see how you can make them truly progressive.
I just have a problem with taxing the same dollar over and over without the dollar changing hands.
Well, no, you don't have to have a problem with that, because the rates would all be worked out so that that would make it no less fair than any kind of a tax we got going now. Mm-hmm. I mean, people are hiding income like crazy. People are probably paying for things under the table in different ways to avoid a sales tax.
No question.
And, there's just, I would think that that could all be worked out. I mean, mathematically, they could figure out how to charge a fair amount so that it would take that into account. And you wouldn't have to worry about all this, statements of income and trying to figure out. And let me tell you what's going on with certain people, including myself, that are self-employed, and we have to pay the whole whack on FICA tax.
Okay.
And it's a very interesting thing, because you can have all, especially if your income is modest. Like, let's say, for example, I'm over 65. I work part-time. You know, so most people over 65, they will have officially retired from their full-time job, but
right,
they'd like to get some part-time income. And with all the different, you know, exemptions, standard deduction, and maybe various credits, all that gets taken out of your taxable income on the second half of the 1040 at the top of the page. All those credits come off it. And then in the middle of the page, there's a line that says taxable income. So that's your AGI minus all your credits and exemptions.
AGI adjusted gross income.
And then it zeroes out. If your income is low enough, it zeroes out so that then your tax liable is zero. That's for your federal tax. But then you go down to the second half of that page, and you've got the FICA tax. And so there is no way to avoid that FICA tax, because you cannot offset it with all your credits and exemptions and so on.
Okay, hold on one second. I want to do a station ID, and then I want to respond to the FICA, the Social Security tax, because Lee also raised that point about removing the cap, and there's some interesting history.
Well, I'm not
theory.
Even talking about removing the cap on the tax you pay.
No,
I'm talking about the fact that on your tax return, you cannot reduce that tax by any kind of credits or anything. For example, I wanted to take a Savers credit. I can't, because it wouldn't do me any good. It gets zeroed out on the top half of the second page of the 1040, and then the FICA tax gets added in below that, and so it can't be reduced that way.
Hmm.
So that's a different thing than taking the income tax cap off. I think that should be done. Definitely. Definitely we should do that.
Well,
but this is a different issue and one that really hurts people that don't have a big income from their self-employed business. And so we're paying the full whack of 15.3%.
Okay, I'm going to talk about that. I need to do a station ID, and
okay.
I really appreciate your call, Mary. You've raised some very interesting stuff, actually. I'm going to do a station ID. I'm going to go to another caller, and
okay.
I very much appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
And thank you very much for calling.
You're quite welcome. Good night.
Good night. We have open lines, 713-526-5738. You are listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston. I have Arthur in downtown Houston on the line. How you doing, Arthur?
Hey, how are you, Mike?
Okay, thank you. What's up?
First, I'd like to pay tribute to your intellect and to
You do that every week.
Well, your intellect is quite impressive.
You're
very lucid and fluid in your put out. So
I wish I was more liquid and less fluid.
Well, you you also are open to challenges of your ideas, and that's unusual, especially among talk show hosts.
That's why it's called Think Wing instead of Right Wing or Left Wing.
Excellent. I would like to bring up something that you said last week.
Okay.
Just before you got into your diatribe about the free zoos.
Okay.
And which I believe is probably that being a liberal, that's probably the tip of the iceberg on freebies for you. But you said something very curious.
Okay. I may retract it. We'll see.
Pardon me?
I may retract it. We'll see.
You said that you were tight. That, in other words, parsimonious, that you were quite tight personally when it came to money.
I can be pretty tight. That's not to say that I'm a skinflint, but I check what I'm buying and what I'm paying for it.
Okay. Well, I would like it very much if you had the same attitude towards public money. But I find this very, very prevalent among liberals, that they're very tight when it comes to personal money, very loose when it comes to public money. And yet, when Republicans, I'm not a Republican,
okay.
Incidentally, I'm an independent.
All right.
But when Republicans start talking about being parsimonious with public money, then liberals start screaming about how mean they are and, you know, unfeeling and inhuman and so on. And I don't know, it seems to me there's a disconnect there.
I can respect where you're coming from, I think. And I'm not going to fundamentally disagree with you. I think, though, that it's a matter of how you see it. The reason that I feel that the zoo should be free, that the Museum of Natural Science should be free, that NASA used to be free, that the Houston Museum of Fine Art should be free, is I see that as part of public education. It's not that I think that the government should just provide all kinds of freebies. I just think that when you make a museum, which is by definition an educational institution, when you put a museum on the same competitive basis with a baseball game or a football game or a movie or a play, I think that now you're just competing for entertainment dollars. And because I believe that an educated electorate is a prerequisite for a democracy, I think that whatever our society can do, whatever taxpayers can do, according to their individual means as taxpayers, benefits society as a whole. I think that more educated people make better employees, they make better business people, they make better politicians, they make better political decisions about whether they should trust what somebody says or some institution says, or whether they should trust what some institution says or does. So I don't see that as just a freebie. I see that as part of the broader, I would say, role or obligation of government to provide educational opportunity for their citizens, because in the long run, that's better for the country and for everybody in the country. Does that make sense?
Listen, any time anybody does anything with money that benefits people, that's good. But the problem is money doesn't grow on trees. And if you've ever had an emergency where you've gone to the emergency room and waited and waited and waited, you have an appreciation that we're not even getting the fundamentals right. I mean, as far as the medical situation, there's not enough money going into health care. And I think our backs are up against the wall, the combination of the population explosion, the problem with, generally speaking, the fact that people have different kinds of expectations today than they did in the past. People in the past worked. They worked and they put out and they didn't have such extravagant expectations.
The crisis of rising expectations is what they used to call it.
Exactly. And as a result, people aren't as self-reliant as they should be, and they're not as responsible for themselves as they should be in terms of the way that people used to be, in terms of how responsible people used to be.
I disagree with that. And I think that the problem is that profits and efficiency are simply flowing to the top, and workers now are simply not being adequately paid.
Okay, wait, right there. Just try to be at the top sometime and accept all that responsibility when something goes wrong.
Just twist my arm, why don't you?
Well, isn't that what the problem is? One time this guy said all the competition is at the bottom. There's no competition at the top. And the reason for that is excellence is so difficult to achieve.
Well, there's a bell curve, I think. Whenever you look at employee productivity, employee effectiveness, there's always a bell curve, the least productive, the most productive, and the average in between. But let's take, for example, the guy who owns Papa John. Now, I haven't liked Papa John since his very first commercial. I don't know if you remember this, where they were, I think, at a Pizza Hut convention. And the former CEO of Pizza Hut comes out in a Papa John uniform. And, of course, everybody in the audience is very puzzled by this. And he just shrugs his shoulders to all the Pizza Hut guys that he took franchise money from and fees from and all this other stuff. He says, gee, I'm sorry, guys, but I found another pizza. Now, I assume that was supposed to be funny. I just thought it was kind of cruel. It's basically sticking it to the guys that put their trust and their money in him. Papa John, who made that same amusing commercial, he's complaining that giving medical insurance to his employees is going to raise his pizza prices, what, a nickel a pie? A nickel a pie. Now, talk about parsimonious, okay? You're going to spend $10 or $15 on a pizza, and Papa John thinks that paying an extra nickel a pie to give his employees medical insurance is going to deter you from buying his pizza. If he really makes a better pizza, a nickel is not going to make the difference. So when you have guys at the top with that kind of attitude, it's really easy to get kind of testy with them.
Well, I think we're talking about two different things here. Because,
First
of all, when you start talking about medical problems and who should pay and how that should be, that's a real can of worms. The problem with running a business, generally speaking, and I imagine you understand the problems of running a business.
I've had some small experience.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's a jungle.
It is.
And you're in competition when you're out making money or running a business, and it's life or death.
And I'll tell you something that I came to realize after being in business for about 10 years and trying to get some people working for me part-time, is that you start off trying to be the boss you always wanted, and you end up being the boss you always had. because people take advantage of you. I mean, it's not a one-way street. If you want your employer to treat you better, you also have to consider treating your employer better. The problem is the mutual respect has to start somewhere, and it has to be mutual. And employers these days want loyalty and productivity, but they don't show any loyalty. And it's really hard, you know, when you talk about how people used to pursue excellence and people used to work hard and people used to take responsibility, but people used to be able to go to work for a company and then retire there. And that's barely possible anymore.
Okay, but here again, this is a cultural phenomenon, and it seems to be unique to the United States, because in other countries like Japan, for example, they don't lay off workers. They keep them on, maybe at a reduced salary or a reduced, but they care about the workers. But America has a very Darwinian attitude towards work and towards industry.
Which is ironic in a country where so few people, or so many people, don't believe in Darwinism. Very Darwinian in business, not so much in science.
Well, there's a disconnect there, too, because they believe in Darwinianism in terms of the way they act, but when it comes to their religion, they don't go along with the fact that we could trace our roots back to simpler organisms. They can't, for example, they worship the Bible, for one thing, as do the Muslims worship their Quran, and the Hindus tend to worship their people, worship their, you know, religious tomes. But in actuality, they do act like they believe in Darwinism because they tend to run their businesses that way.
Yes, they do. And it goes back, and I'm going to have to let you go.
Sure.
I like speaking to you.
Enjoy talking with you, Mike.
Thank you so much.
You bet.
You
Bye.
Take care.
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to say that, what was I going to say? Oh, shoot. Okay, it'll come to me. Let me do a quick station ID. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. We have open lines. The phone number is 713-526-5738. Open forum. We don't have a guest, so whatever's on your mind. Steve in Houston, I thank you so much for being patient. How are you doing tonight?
I'm great, Mike. I don't even know where to start with all this. This is just so much of what was being said is just nonsense.
Ah, okay. Let's begin.
I got to tell you, you know, I'm a business owner.
Okay.
And to categorize people in business today that don't care about their employees, that don't give a crap about how they run their businesses, I just think it's ridiculous.
Well, those are two different things. I'm not saying they don't care about how they run their businesses, but I think that there are employers who simply see their employees as assets and not people.
Okay, there are, and there are people who steal, and there are people who do all sorts of bad things.
And take advantage of their employers,
but,
no question.
But the problem is this idea of the wealthy versus the non-wealthy, this is getting out of control in our country.
What do you propose?
Well, I got to tell you, you know, I work hard, and I have not always had money. There have been times when I didn't have money, but guess what? I pay taxes. And 50% of the people in America today don't pay any taxes.
Everybody
today.
Pays taxes. Now you want to talk?
No.
You want to talk income tax? That's different.
Income tax.
Okay, then say
and
that.
And that's a huge portion of what people should pay.
Well, they don't make enough.
And the idea that the wealthy should continue to subsidize the rest of the country when they are completely overtaxed in so many areas is just preposterous.
What do you consider being overtaxed?
I'm overtaxed. I'm way overtaxed. I have property tax. I have income tax.
So do
I. Sales tax.
So do I.
I have every tax known to man.
I have every tax you have.
Not that, well, at your income level, maybe not 50% of the population doesn't.
50% of the population has all the taxes we have, and the 50% that doesn't have all the taxes we have would love to have all the taxes we have if only they were making more than, say, $7.25 an hour.
But here's what happens, and this is where the thinking gets really skewed. You were talking about the whole issue about a VAT tax on a Mercedes. Doesn't someone who buys a Mercedes actually pay a higher amount for that car?
Yes.
And doesn't that higher amount fund a lot of workers who then turn around and make money that then contribute back to the economy?
If they make enough.
Well, the enough part is the part of what makes America great. You know, I made minimum wage, but I learned how to do things, and I learned how to think, and I learned business principles, and I had to go out and work hard and do it. This idea that people can't rise above their station in life is just nonsense. I look at people all the time. And by the way, I'm a big employer in Houston.
Okay.
I'm hiring a lot of people.
Okay.
And I have made it to where, good grief, people in a phone job can make very good money. We pay our people very well.
Thank you.
And I train them, and I invest in their skill levels and so forth. We're helping them rise in their station of life. But it, at the end of the day, do I have people that don't make it? Yes. And you know why? Because they don't want to work. They don't want to invest in themselves. I can only do so much for people.
I agree with you. There are people that take advantage. That's why I said that you start off being the employer or the manager you always wanted, and you end up being the manager you always had. People take advantage of you, and it makes you cynical. And you know what? If you're one of the employers that actually tries to lift people up, that tries to pay them well, that takes an interest in their people, not as assets but as individuals, if you're one of those guys, I applaud you. We need more guys like that.
Well, I guess I'm saying to you, there are more people than you think like that. And I think the people who are doing it well get a real bum rap with the people who don't necessarily do it, because that's the one that gets the news.
That may very well be so.
And I got to tell you, when it comes down to taxes, I just think this whole issue of taxes needs to be turned around and talk about spending, because it's the spending that's driving the taxes.
Do you believe? I'm sorry.
This idea that we need to be paying more in taxes when the spending levels are out of control is just ridiculous.
Okay, Egberto wants to ask you something, I think.
Sure.
What happens here, Steve, is you are not the problem. You're actually the solution that folks have turned into a problem. You are really the real, what I call the real American that's out there busting his butt, forming a business, but you are not the problem. They make you believe that you're the problem. If you take a look at the income inequality that we're talking about, you are not the ones that we're talking about. You're not the 1% that is really extracting your wealth. That's not what we're talking about. You are actually being harmed by the 1% by being
the bad apples.
You are being held by the 1% to guard them, to be the backstop for them. The way that what they are using you for is to attack those that are below you, that 47% that everybody talks about that don't pay income tax. The reality is they pay more taxes on a percentage basis than most of the wealthy and otherwise, because their taxes are the recessive type taxes as opposed
regressive.
To the other. I'm sorry, you're right. Thank you, Mike. The regressive
type. Okay, but we put the wealthy in a categorization.
No, sir. I'm not talking about you, though, sir.
Well, I think actually Egberto makes an interesting point that if you are the kind of employer you say you are, and if you're the kind of employer that I believe you feel you are, then you should be as angry at these other greedy SOBs as anybody, because they're making you look bad. So maybe you should be getting on
their
case.
No, you know what I get? I'm the recipient of people who are fed up with that.
Yes.
And I wind up making more money. I wind up my business winds up growing, my business excels. I don't really care about that, but what I do care about is this idea that because I make good money, that somehow the government wants to extract more of that from me.
Well,
it's as though I have been making good money for a long period of time, and that's just not true.
I think that there's an argument to be made for tax progressivity, and that is sort of a different discussion all on its own. And at some point in time, I am going to have a tax specialist on this show. I tried to get him on tonight, but he's actually working in Washington for a subcommittee. What are you going to do? But, you know, I'll go back to, if you are the employer who treats his people right, who tries to be socially responsible, you should be as angry at the greedy ones that give you a bad reputation as any of the workers.
I am, but I'm also very angry at those who talk about this income inequality as though everybody deserves equal money.
No. Income inequality doesn't mean that everybody should be paid equally, but income inequality means that maybe the lowest paid worker in a company should not make more than, say, shouldn't make less than, say, 2% of what the employer makes. I think that in Japan at one point, and even in the United States, the gap between the highest paid employee, like the CEO or the owner, and the lowest paid employee was like somewhere between 20 and 50 times. And now it's in the hundreds of times. That's income inequality.
The business owner risked his life savings. The business owner put in time, energy, effort, money at risk when nobody else would. And then they get the business to a certain point, and then you're telling me that I can make no more than one of my workers at a certain level? How ridiculous.
Did you do it all by yourself, or did you get some help from society?
Well, when you say help from society, what do you mean?
Well, let's see. You've got workers who are literally spending their lives in your job, spending it.
I pay them well.
Okay, and that's great if you do. You've also got schools that your taxes pay for to educate your employees. So
I paid for that.
That's right. And society gave it back to you and educated workers.
No, no, no. I paid for that. I bought that.
You bought?
This is not a free gift that the government gave back to me.
Your government is training and educating your employees before they come to work for you.
Baloney.
Your government builds roads that lead to your plant.
That is total baloney.
Okay, they're not building roads?
I mean, honestly.
Are you building the roads?
I'm telling you that when I get people, I have to retrain them in areas the government never could.
Well,
in fact,
we're not.
I'm getting people right now that have basic immaturities about showing up to work on time, dressing appropriately. If government was doing such a great job at education, why am I not on the receiving end of really great people?
Well,
I have to go through a ton of people to get a very small percentage of what I would call excellent workers.
I think every company has to go through tons of people to find people that fit into their company culture and their company, the style of business that they do. I mean, every company goes through that struggle. And you're always going to have people at the bottom and people at the top and people in the middle. That's what the bell curve is about. You're always going to have employees that excel. And employees that, you know, they kind of drag, but maybe they're borderline, you hang on to them. And then you're going to have the big middle. That's just, you know, that's the bell curve.
But this idea that society provided me with something is just preposterous. I've paid for it all.
You've paid for it all, but you haven't. You've paid for the roads in part. You've paid for the police protection in part. You've paid for the military forces protection in part. You've paid for weather service assistance or information in part. There are a lot of things you've paid for in part. All of us have paid for different things in part, but you haven't paid for them. You're a shareholder. You're a minority shareholder.
It doesn't matter, a minority shareholder. I paid in excess of what most people have paid and then some. And here's the other piece. I risked capital that if it went south, guess what? Nobody's going to refund that money. If you can't have it both ways. You can't say, okay, society helped you do this, but if you risk money and you lose it, you're on your own, dude.
Well, on the other hand, though, we have a lot of businesses where that isn't the case, it seems. Now, you're a small business, so you might not be in that privileged class, but there is a privileged class of business that cannot fail. So
nobody's going to bail me out if I fail.
That's very probably true.
I got to tell you, I have to make decisions every day that have the fate of hundreds of workers at hand. And you know what? I have to make those decisions based upon how those people are going to keep their jobs, because I have families dependent upon that. I didn't win 4 Best Places to Work awards. Best, you know, we've got tons of awards that we won because we run a great business. But this idea, it really comes more from the Democratic side than the Republican side, which is really geared around, I owe something far more than other people do simply because I might make more money.
Steve,
how ridiculous.
I I do appreciate your call. I hope you don't feel like I'm cutting you off. We've actually had...
No.
Okay. I hope I'll hear from you again. You've made some interesting points. I don't disagree with everything you've said. I don't agree with everything you've said. But I do thank you, and I hope I'll hear from you again.
Okay, my friend.
Take care, Steve.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Listening to ThinkWing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT, we have three other callers on the line. I'm going to try to get everybody on. Four other callers. Okay, anyhow, I'm going to try to get everybody on, so everybody try to be succinct. The next one up is Lee. You've called back, so apparently you had something. Larry? You wrote Lee. Larry, well, no, Lee's been on for 10 minutes.
Okay, I've got a real easy question. I've been listening to this caller for minutes.
Yeah, about 10 minutes.
I am a longtime supporter since March of 1970. I am also a small business owner in Houston. And my question to him was, does he support the station?
Okay, that is not irrelevant, although I'm not sure it's entirely germane.
Well,
he's
saying he's paying for everything.
Well, he may support some stations. He may not support all
stations.
No, not
some stations. I'm talking this station. I've supported this station since March of 1970.
Yeah, he says he pays for everything. So I think that's where some of us have an issue, is when he says he pays for everything, whereas I see him more as a minority shareholder in everything.
No, nobody pays for everything.
Nobody pays for everything. Okay, Larry.
And I was just curious as to whether or not he paid for the ability to be able to call in and talk to you for 10, 15 minutes.
Okay, that's interesting. We'll see if he calls back next week and responds to a couple of your points.
All right, thanks a lot. Have a good evening.
Thank you, Larry. You too. Who's next? Now it's Lee. Lee.
Hello.
Hi.
I'd like to compliment Stephen. He's right. He should not be paying the taxes he does. GM, Aerostar, General Electric, General Dynamics, all pay nothing and get tax refunds. Right.
That's right. So he is being treated unfairly compared to them.
So the point being is, he's right. He's being abused by the tax system.
Yeah.
This is why, since the Supreme Court came down with the decision that companies are people, let those people pay the Social Security tax they should pay. Let them pay a percentage and a flat rate on gross income, and he won't have that problem.
You know, there's a great quote, and I'm not going to misquote it tonight, but there's a great quote that I'm going to bring in next week from a show that was on called Reaper, and it talks specifically about corporations and personality and sociopathy. So,
okay, now I'm back to take the cap off of Social Security.
Oh, I wanted to respond to that.
Corporations like GM, General Dynamics, Raytheon pay their Social Security.
Yeah, if they're people, they ought to pay Social Security. Let me talk about the cap for a moment.
I'll listen.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you so much, Lee. I'm sorry if you feel like I was cutting you off, but hopefully I wasn't. The cap on Social Security, the reason that it's a flat tax, the reason that it's a non-progressive payroll tax, is when Roosevelt and his female Secretary of Labor, I cannot remember her name, but she was very instrumental. There was talk about whether it should be progressive, how it should be calculated. The reason it's flat, you know, Republicans call it entitlements, and Democrats have been snookered into calling it an entitlement. It is not an entitlement. It is an earned benefit. And the reason it's an earned benefit is exactly the reason that they made it a flat tax, so that nobody could argue that it should be taken away. Every employee has contributed to it, and therefore every employee has earned Social Security. They're not just entitled. They're entitled to what they've earned. So, and then that cap has to do with, if you had a billionaire paying a capless Social Security tax, that starts to get into a different question about whether it is an earned benefit or an entitlement. So it gets complicated. Okay, Christopher, we've got a couple of minutes, so I feel like I can give you a fair shot of time here. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, buddy. How are you doing?
Okay. What's on your mind?
Well, I was with a couple of the guys, I guess a couple callers before.
Mm-hmm.
I was with him until he went to the Republican
Democrat gig.
Yeah, that annoyed me a little bit, but
you know what I'm saying? I mean,
but were we surprised?
But here's the deal. Okay, I'm a business owner. All right, and there's a problem with labor. There's a problem with work ethic. We know that. That's a family issue, I believe.
Yeah, it's a cultural issue. Whoop. I think I lost you. Christopher, if you call right back, we'll put you on. We've got about 4 minutes, 3 minutes left in the show, and I promise I'll give you a little time to finish what you were saying if you call back. We apologize for accidentally cutting you off. Yeah, Egberto is apologizing. You know, we apologize. These things happen. But going back to the Social Security thing, I think it was Mary who was talking about, you know, we should remove the cap. And it goes back to this theoretical question. Social Security, one of the reasons it is a defensible benefit is because of the way it's taxed. Now, employers pay half and employees pay half. Having been self-employed for 20 years, I can tell you it is no fun paying both halves. But the reason still is sound, which is it's an earned benefit. And by having a cap, you're not getting into whether a billionaire has earned a multi-million dollar benefit, because that wouldn't be a help. People that want to remove the cap, the idea is it helps to fund just a little bit more. I'm more inclined to raise the cap and to raise the progressive taxes on the 1%, the 0.1%. Taxes. Okay. I think that unless we have a caller, no, we don't have a caller. Okay, then I think we're going to pretty much wrap it up tonight. Let's see. Couple of things I'm just going to throw out there. McDonald's managers admit to making staff work without pay. That's not the first time that's happened. I will tell you that working for a large employer, you have a labor budget, and they really squeeze you. They pull you by the short hairs to get you to fill that labor budget, and it becomes impossibly small. You always hear the comment, you need to do more with less. So I like to point out that if you continue to follow that curve, at some point you have to do everything with nothing. So we need to rethink that mantra, do more with less. There's just a point where that doesn't work. Thank you so much for those of you who have listened. Thank you for those of you who have called in, especially the folks that didn't entirely agree with me. I appreciate them. And the people who agree with me, I appreciate them. You've been listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I will be back next Wednesday night at 10 p.m. Thank you for listening. And I want to point out, normally I do the slow traffic thing. This week I want to point out, if the 99% vote, the 1% don't matter. Have a great week.
Suburbia is proud to present Olive in the Bitter Herbs, a colorful sweet and sour dish laced with laughter by Charles Bush. This Houston premiere features Lee Raymond in the role of Olive Fisher, an elderly character actress and classic New York curmudgeon. Olive is at war with the world, and in particular, her gay next-door neighbors. She is visited by a spectral male figure in her mirror, and a series of strange and outrageous coincidences are revealed. This production, directed by Suzanne King, opens on April 11th and runs through May 10th, Fridays and Saturdays at 8:30 p.m., and Sundays, April 27th and May 4th at 3 p.m. Theater Suburbia is located at 4106 Way Out West Drive in Houston. You can visit theatersuburbia.org for more information. KPFT, Houston. If you're a regular listener to KPFT, no doubt you've heard our fund drives. This hour, you can reduce fund drives with one simple step. Sustaining members make a convenient, ongoing monthly contribution, which means less mail, no renewal notices, and uninterrupted status as a KPFT member. Sustaining membership is an easy and efficient way for you to support the programs you rely on through secure, automatic monthly payments from your credit card, debit card, or bank account. This means we'll deduct your designated contribution from your account until you let us know to stop or change it. And the more sustaining members KPFT has, the more regular revenue and less need to interrupt programming for fund drives. Just visit KPFT.com.